Fires in Oregon have burned more than 900,000 acres now, many burning outside some of the state's most populous areas. Just outside of Portland, people are preparing for evacuations, which does not happen often. Here's Chris Sullivan with that.
My Facebook feed is full of friends posting pictures of the fires and how close they are to their homes and businesses just outside of the Portland city limits. I'm talking places like Oregon City, Canby, Gresham, Sandy. Friends packing their go bags, others packing up treasures from their businesses and hoping for the best. Others are moving livestock and horses. Many of my friends are under level 3 evacuation notices, which I can never remember. Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts.
Level 1, be ready for the potential evacuation. Level 2, be set to evacuate. You must prepare to leave at just a moment's notice. And level 3 is go. Evacuate now.
Towns like Lake Oswego and Milwaukee are also under level 1 evacuation notices, though they're far from the fire, but still, they're on notice. Eugene Bendass says he lost everything in a wildfire near his home in Oregon City.
I had to grab just a couple things, which really wasn't enough, and basically what I'm wearing is what I have.
Multnomah County, which is home to Portland, is telling people to start prepping for potential evacuations. Now, I spent more than 30 years in Portland. I can't remember this ever happening. Now, the potential danger in the urban centers has become so real that Oregon and Washington have called off the closure of the Interstate Bridge over the Columbia River. One of the two spans crossing the river was supposed to close for 9 days, starting tomorrow. That's been postponed as emergency managers don't want to reduce the road capacity in case of widespread evacuations. We warned you of that construction closure earlier this week in choke points. And speaking of traffic, there is a closure locally that you need to be aware of. The 520 bridge is going to be closed in both directions this weekend. Closure begins at 11 o'clock tonight, should be wrapped up by 5 a.m. Monday. Contractors working on the eastbound on-ramps from Montlake, and the state's Steve Pierce says they're making some other repairs.
During the weekend closure, we'll also replace a large sign bridge on the floating bridge that was damaged last year.
410, the highway there between Sumner and Bonnie Lake, will remain closed probably through next week, right through that wildfire zone before the road can reopen. The state must replace long sections of scorched guardrail and inspect the burns hillside above for any potential slide danger.
Wow, so they put off the closing of the I-5 bridge to Portland because they're worried about evacuation needs.
Yeah, they wanted to make sure that if something were to happen either direction, they would be at full capacity to move people and move emergency services wherever they needed them, get the first responders wherever they needed to go. Yeah, yeah. I've never experienced anything remotely like this in growing up in the Portland area.
I mean,
never.
This is stuff that you thought was confined to California, but not anymore.
That or to the extreme eastern side of the state. I mean, in being a reporter in Portland for 13 years, I never covered a wildfire on the west side of the Cascades. They're always on the other side. Never in the urban areas. But, things have changed.
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
And now we take a break from the present and sneak off into the past. With historian Felix Bunnell, who joins us every Friday for All Over the Map, which is a quick look at the stories behind the names of local places. And this week, the old railroad town of Cedar Falls, just one of many names, perhaps too many names, Felix says, for a popular recreation area on Snoqualmie Pass. Good morning, Felix.
Hey, morning, Dave. I would guess many Cairo listeners have been to the Cedar Falls Trailhead. It's off I-90 at exit 32. There's a lot of history there and some distinctive recreational opportunities. My personal favorite is the Palouse to Cascades Trail that goes east, up and over Snoqualmie Pass, along the edge of the City of Seattle watershed. Now, also at that spot is Rattlesnake Lake and Rattlesnake Ledge. I hope you're writing all this down, by the way.
I've been there.
Which are co-managed by the City of Seattle with the state and King County. One important fact, that popular Rattlesnake Ledge Trail is closed because of the pandemic. The rattlesnake name comes from pioneer Arthur Denny for the sound of dried seed pods that frightened a member of a survey party. That's my favorite naming story I've come across lately. Now, the City of Seattle has a hydroelectric plant nearby on the Cedar River. That's where the Cedar Falls name comes from. And an environmental education center's there. The Snoqualmie Valley Trail, run by King County Parks, also begins there and goes all the way to Duval. As I say, there's a lot going on at that spot, lots of names and lots of signage. Now, the Palouse to Cascades Trail follows a route of the Milwaukee Road. That's the same railroad that we talked about on Wednesday about that fire in Malden. That was a railroad town there, too. Now, from Cedar Falls, you can walk or bike, and if you can make it 18 miles up to Hyack, you can go through the spooky 2-mile-long tunnel.
Yes.
And then, which is very, very nice, cool place to cool off in the summer.
It is.
Yep.
But spooky.
It is. You can bring a flashlight. There's a few gaps. You can go all the way to Idaho. Now, until 2018, that trail was known both as Iron Horse State Park and the John Wayne Pioneer Trail for the Hollywood actor. Wayne died in 1979, around the same time that the Milwaukee Road went out of business, and when the state was first thinking about purchasing the old right-of-way. There was a rancher in Ellensburg named Paul Hart who said that John Wayne was a hero. He told the Seattle Times in 1981, you know, people looked up to him, and he was a friend of President Reagan. I would add that the Duke also starred in the Dirty Harry-style film The Cue, which was filmed in Seattle in 1974. But back to Cedar Falls. That was a name on the very handsome railroad depot that was built there in 1910, served passengers until about 1960, and then as a freight office for many years after that. Now, the depot's long gone, and but the Cedar Falls sign was saved, and it's still there right next to the trail. You can get right up to it and look at it. Now, the depot went away in the 1980s. I assumed it had been torn down. I just learned yesterday that a very determined enthusiast bought it from the railroad in 1988, took it apart piece by piece, and then moved it carefully and reassembled it to become his family home in South King County.
Wow.
Now, I'm told they don't like publicizing where it is. I saw a photo. It's gorgeous. With the setting it's in now, you'd never guess it was an old depot. Its location is a well-kept secret, and I don't want to be the one to spill the beans. Now, very quickly here, I know we're running out of time. There's a lot of confusion about the naming there at Cedar Falls, the Palouse Cascades, Rattlesnake Lake, Iron Horse, John Wayne, whatever. My dream would be that all the jurisdictions involved, City of Seattle, King County, the state, would come up with a single name for that recreation complex that would make it easy to understand, easy for people to find, reduce all the visual clutter. There's a lot of really awful signs all kind of crowded in there. I don't have any brilliant ideas myself, but I know our listeners, and I'd love to hear suggestions via the text line 98973 for what we should call that recreation area there on Snoqualmie Pass.
Felix Land sounds good to me.
That would be very confusing, especially to me.
Yes, it would. Felix Bedell, all his features at MyNorthwest.com. Putting aside for a moment the content of the president's conversations with Bob Woodward, I've been trying to understand why he would keep talking to Bob Woodward on tape again and again. So we called up Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan to see if she knows.
You'd have to ask him. But, you know, the president, for as much as he complains about journalists, he loves talking to them. And certainly for Bob Woodward, who has brought down presidents because of his accurate reporting as to some of their worst misdeeds, as he did with the Nixon administration, did ask the president for an interview, and the president gave him 18. And he had those recorded, and that audio we can now listen to because it's published on the Washington Post website, and it will also be on 60 Minutes this Sunday. My colleague Scott Pelley sat down with Bob Woodward, and we will have an excerpt from that interview airing on Face the Nation Sunday.
Yeah, so where do you come down on this? Is it fair to say the president deliberately lied about the virus to the American people?
Look, I think that word itself is so loaded that people won't listen to the answer if you use it. I think it is 100% worth looking at and holding our leaders to account to say, what did you do in your prime role, which is to protect me as an American? I pay your salary. I pay for the bureaucracy. I pay for the democracy. I pay for the institutions. When those institutions fail to protect, it is 100% within all of our rights to question them and say, what did you know and when? And why weren't you telling us that? So those things, I think, are valid for any president. Unfortunately, everything in our society these days is so politicized that you have to pick which team you're on, and that shapes the prism through which you interpret it. But I think for any commander in chief, the job is first and foremost to protect the American public, and it is 100% accurate, and it is 100% justified to say, why did what you say in private completely contradict what you said in public?
Yeah. And what about Woodward himself? Did he have a responsibility once he saw that the president was saying one thing in private and a very different thing in public? Mm-hmm. Did he have a responsibility back in February to come forward and point that out?
Well, you know, Bob Woodward has answered some of this criticism in an interview in The Washington Post, his own newspaper, that he gave in saying that it required context and reporting around it. And that was what most fully informed the situation, to be able to say, did the president know what he was talking about? Was what he was telling me accurate? And that's what Bob Woodward said he had to go out and vet in order to release it in its full context, which is what he did in this book. Obviously, you can have your own skepticism about that, but that is what Bob Woodward has said to justify it. And when things like the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, being quoted as saying, Mr. President, this will be the worst crisis that you face, period, and having said that in early February, yet going out and publicly saying, don't panic, this isn't a major crisis, we already knew that because that had been in print. It is a different thing to hear the recording of the president say that because it can't be misinterpreted.
on the upcoming election and the concerns the president has raised about security of the ballots, what's the latest polling on that? Is that going to end up either, I mean, I can see two reactions, either it discourages people from voting or people say, well, by golly, if they're trying to take my vote, I'm more determined than ever to make sure I stand in that line as long as it's necessary to get my ballot registered.
This is such an important issue. We're going to talk about it with Sue Gornan, who is the former number two at U.S. intelligence. She is a career intelligence official, and she is deeply concerned that Americans' faith in our institutions and our democratic process is being undermined. And she wants to explain to us what the, as an intelligence official, what the actual risks are and how people at home can protect themselves from being manipulated. We know there is foreign interference happening and that to this point, and we learned even more about it just yesterday, that it is to shape your thinking. And that is through manipulation of social media. That is through manipulation of public information regarding where to go vote, et cetera. So we're going to talk about that, how to spot it, because it is important that people be able to go out and vote. Democracy only works if people exercise their vote. And so figuring out how to do it, and CBS is going to publish specific data on the states and the dates and how you do it, that's something we will continue to check in on Face the Nation.
Excellent. Margaret Brennan, host of CBS's Face the Nation. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you.
For the second time in 2 days, Pierce County officials have arrested someone for intentionally starting a fire. Let's go to Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
That huge cloud of smoke had been sitting off the coast, but a bit of a wind shift and more smoke coming from devastating fires in Oregon have it inching slowly towards Puget Sound. And Dana Felton with the National Weather Service says it's going to be bad today.
Doesn't look good. We've already got very unhealthy air quality.
Best advice?
The best advice, unfortunately, with the air quality this bad is to just stay inside.
The good news is today won't be quite as hot and dry as yesterday, and tomorrow could be even better. But it's not clear just how long this giant cloud of smoke will linger above us. As for the fires here in Pierce County, homeowners returning to evacuated areas in Graham to see what's left.
I've never seen anything like this in Washington. I mean, I've lived here all my life.
Some of the thousands evacuated in the Sumner Grade Fire in Bonnie Lake and Sumner have also been allowed back in some areas for a phased reentry. But that 800-acre fire is still only about 20% surrounded. So even those being allowed to return are also being told to be ready to evacuate once again should things take a turn. State Route 410 remains closed between 181st Avenue East and 166th Avenue East. All of Myers Road also still closed. Elsewhere in the state,
there was nothing left.
Homeowners in Okanagan County are returning to get a look at what they've lost.
I was absolutely devastated. I cried right at that moment. It was very hard to come to the realization of there's nothing to come back to.
Her home lost in the Cold Springs fire, which has now charred an area three times the size of Seattle and remains just 10% surrounded. That is the same fire that claimed the life of a one-year-old boy this week, severely injuring the boy's parents as the Renton family desperately tried to escape the flames near Omak.
Our hearts are broken by the loss of a young boy in the Colville area. I know when we saw his picture, we melted. And we hope that family's going to do as well as humanly possible. And we want to keep them in our hearts as we move forward on this.
Governor Inslee, during a tour of the town of Malden yesterday, south of Spokane.
This is a place where the whole heart of the town was torn out. The town was demolished. A cataract of fire swept through here from this direction. And has now destroyed probably 70-80% of the town, including virtually all of the public assets that we have had.
And
the things the state will be engaged in the next several weeks is assessing our level of damages to determine if we can qualify for federal assistance from Alden and other places. And that is dependent largely on the amount of loss that we suffer.
He reiterated his position that climate change is to blame for what we're seeing in this year's fires and warned it would only get worse.
We do know that we are operating in changing conditions. We do know that we're living in a new Washington. We're living in a Washington where explosive fire seasons are becoming, unfortunately, routine. not the exception. In the last 5 years, we've had three of the worst fire seasons ever in the history of the state of Washington. And we know why this is happening. We know why the grass becomes drier and the heat goes up and even wind goes up. And that's because our climate is changing.
Now, others argue a lack of investment in clearing brush and other fuels for fire are to blame, at least in part.
Where we can, management of some of our forests, which we are doing, we're spending millions of dollars right now thinning some of our forests so they're less explosive. And we're doing that across the state of Washington. But that's not something you can do in a week. We're doing a small percentage every year to try to make our forests less explosive.
Everyone is again strongly urged to be careful not to cause even one spark, whether that be flicking a cigarette out the window, letting a trailer chain drag too low on the road, or anything else that can easily cause a spark that leads to a fire. Burn bans are in effect in most counties, both for fire danger and air quality. The governor issuing a proclamation to make it easier for those who've lost homes to access cash assistance and other services. The Red Cross helping with shelter. What is not helping? Arsonists. For the second time in as many days yesterday, a man in Pierce County arrested for intentionally setting a fire, according to State Patrol, who says drivers near Highway 512 and State Route 7 in the Parkland area called it in after seeing the guy set a brush fire. One day earlier, the State Patrol, Puyallup, and Fife Police all teamed up after a tipster reported another guy setting a brush fire in the medium along Highway 167 that eventually charred about 3 acres before finally being put out. Meantime, officials in both Washington and Oregon are trying to quiet fast-spreading rumors about Antifa or groups like the Proud Boys having set dozens of fires in both states, saying that that is just not the case at this point, and stressing that any arson investigation takes time and that rumors are not helpful and can spread just as bad as the wildfires. Meantime, the Oregon Transportation Department announcing late last night it was going to be forced to halt a long-planned project for the I-5 bridge over the Columbia River that's taken years to plan because of concerns about the fires.
Word on that earlier. I'm thinking about, you know, looking at some of the neighborhoods around this area. You look at the old pictures, and it was at one point, our neighborhood was basically farmland and orchards. Now, in the last 50 years, people let their trees grow. It's like an old growth forest out here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder what exactly you're going to do to, you know, prepare.
Yeah. It wasn't until I worked on the east side of the state that I really became, quite good at this, you know, fire prevention and safety. You don't want anything near your home. All of the beautiful landscaping and shrubbery that we have, if that's anywhere near your home, especially since many, at least in my neighborhood, we've all just kind of given up on watering our lawns. It's a waste of water.
Right.
It's hard to keep the weeds out, you know, so everything goes brown to save on water, and that's very dangerous combined with your landscaping. So, you know, we're going full xeriscape eventually. Just rocks and, you know, drought.
Well, I told you about my wild violet lawn.
Your wild violet. Oh, yes. Yeah,
the mine's wild. They clovers, stay, but their roots are deep enough that they stay green.
Yeah.
Same thing with the ivy.
I mean, why not?
You can't get rid of the ivy.
Anyways, if you want to look for any tips on that, you know, DNR has that. I think now is the time to start preparing because, as Sully said earlier, it's rare that we cover wildfires on the west side of the state. That time is now. So it is not over prevention to start to think about your landscaping. It's time for your daily dose of kindness, sponsored by Mike Novak and listwithnovak.com. In this economic crisis, there's a story of perseverance that has received some national attention. It takes place in East Nashville. Lashenda Williams spent the night in a Kroger parking lot. She was homeless and alone, unsure of where her next meal was going to come from. Well, she now has a job at that very Kroger grocery store and was given a chance to shine, even in her darkest hours.
I've been here actually this month, and the next, the 10th will be 10 months.
Williams is the embodiment of happiness and light. WKRN spoke to her new manager.
I knew there was a struggle, a hardship, but no, I didn't know she was living in her car at the time. No, sir. She's a fantastic worker. I wish I had 120 of her.
And you can understand why she wants more workers like Williams.
I love it. I get excited every day to get up and come in. I can't wait to see the workers who I work with. I can't wait to see the customers.
And as I mentioned, Williams' story didn't start out so happy. She remembers sleeping in her car.
I never knew that sleeping out in that parking lot and wanted something to eat
and all the abuse and all the things I went through would land me right here.
She chose the Kroger parking lot to sleep in her car and many nights just pray.
Words can't even, I can't even put it in words. All I know is I just wanted something to eat. That was it. Something to eat. That was it.
And now she's feeding others at that grocery store where she's made a big impact for everyone there.
Let me tell you, she's changed our lives. We're more thankful. We're more appreciative. We're more happy. We feed off of that uplifting spirit that she has.
And thanks to her hard work, Williams is no longer living out of her car. Of course, she has an apartment thanks to her job and with some help from her fellow Kroger employees.
Job makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. And also paying attention. That's what this story was about for me. Somebody who had the means, somebody who had the authority and privilege of having a job and being a manager and just watching, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it would be easy to just say, this is a nuisance. This is a distraction from the type of environment we're trying to foster at the grocery store. I don't want people living in their cars in my parking lot. Instead, she said, what's your story? Oh, yeah. Here's a job.
Here's
that's
right.
A complete opposite side of the coin from what we typically hear.
I think, though, and this is based on emails I get from listeners occasionally, there's a lot of this going on that doesn't get publicized. There are people who are doing this all on their own, and that makes the difference.
Yes, and that's why I have this Daily Dose of Kindness here. So if it is happening locally here, I want to hear about it. You can reach out to the show through the inbox at mynorthwest.com. Text us at 98973. Reach out through email. It's easy to find us. I want to share these stories.
Yeah, make it a normal thing so it's no longer news, right? So it's just the kind of thing that happens all the time.
So that old trope of, you know, there's only bad, I hear it all the time. Like, I don't watch news because it's, or listen to news because it's too sad. And I go, no, listen at 7:30. We've got some hope in here.
7:49 now for the G and Ursula Show, weekdays 9 to noon. Here he is, G. Scott. So, at the Chiefs versus Texans game last night, the players linked arms in the show of unity, and there were boos from the crowd. Like, they want this whole social justice thing to go away. Is that what you took from that?
I was shocked. I mean, I'm not shocked if you know, there's going to be complaints about kneeling during the anthem. I'm not shocked at comments randomly on Twitter. But let me just set the stage. It's Thursday night football. It is the first game of the season. There's only a select amount of fans that are allowed into the stadium. So, this is going to be cool. Oh, my goodness. Look at the players show unity by locking arms with each other. Never in a million years, maybe I continue to be naive, never would I have thought that that select amount of people in the crowd, in that stadium, would choose that chance to boo. I mean, don't NFL fans basically say, don't use the national anthem to make a statement. Then the Texans and the Chiefs say, okay, we'll make our statement during a moment of unity after the anthem. And what do the fans do? They boo.
What did that do for you, G?
It made me sigh. It made me realize just how much work really needs to be done. And I think that it doesn't matter who you are and what your opinion is. I think over the last 5 months that we have been talking about this a lot for the first time, not for the first time, but more than we should have been. I think we have all realized, like, man, it's really bad. And so that was a moment that I would think that the fans would cheer a moment of unity. And so it's just further proof, Colleen, that it was never about the anthem and the flag. It was never about that. It was people using that to disguise what they really feel. And the last thing I'll say, Colleen, it really made me know that there are a fraction of the country. I don't think the entire country, but there really is a fraction of our country that do not want unity. That's kind of heartbreaking.
Or do they feel that the players are themselves privileged and so have no business claiming some sort of persecution?
I don't think they look at the players as this might be a little drastic. I just think they look at the players. They're like, yo, just shut up and dribble, or just play the game. Like if you think about it, right? Like check this out. the people that were in that crowd, they were there to see a football game. So they were in Kansas City, so a lot of Kansas City Chiefs fans. Their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, black, right? A lot of their players, our former Frank Clark, who used to be, but there's a lot of black players on the team. So that lets me know, like, hey, they're okay with black players being on their team.
Yeah.
But I just don't want the black players having unity or anything like that. I want you guys to just shut up and play. So how on, so if they did that moment of unity and you booed, why didn't you leave? Well, you didn't leave because you're just there to see them play. And that's the problem that we have.
It makes me wonder if they have anybody in their life to help them understand, because it's one thing to watch football and have, you know, players on the team, your team, be black, but to have somebody in your life to actually explain that, you know, a police officer doesn't know how much money I have in my wallet when I get pulled over, right? That your financial means doesn't necessarily mean you are immune to any type of racial profiling or racism. I wonder about that. How many have somebody? It's like you see with, you know, LGBTQ people. How many of us know somebody who is gay who can explain the struggles?
In Bellevue, Colleen, probably 2-3 months ago, myself, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Bobby Wagner. There was a lot of, there was a few NFL players there. They were trying to get some work in. This is, you know, places weren't open, so they had to get outside to get some work. And there were some other college kids that were there as well that were just were working out. Well, on the track, right? This is in Bellevue. On the track, there was a girls' team that were kind of working out over there on the track, and the police came. And so when the police came, I was like, oh, okay, well, let me go and talk to them. They says, yeah, we just got a call that you guys aren't social distancing out here. and I said, oh, okay. I was like, well, as you can see, sir, we're trying our best. We're not really, like, hugging each other. And he kind of laughed. He's like, yeah, you guys are going to have to get going. This park's closed. And then I look over. I said, it's closed for everybody? He's like, yeah, I said, well, do you see the track team over there? Oh, we didn't get the call on them. And then the other officer looks and he says, hey, is that Cam Chancellor? Bingo.
Oh, my God.
Bingo.
There you go.
There it is.
G and Ursula, 9 to noon, Cairo Radio. Thanks, G. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.